This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. As the 2024 presidential election is already in full swing and states across the country are starting to hold their primaries, the issues of abortion access and the Israeli genocide in Gaza are front and center. But there are many other issues of crucial importance to the U.S. electorate, which we'll be covering on this program now through November. Among them is the issue of reparations for Black Americans. A champion of the reparations movement joins me today, Edgar Villanueva, best-selling author of the book Decolonizing Wealth, Indigenous Wisdom to Heal Divides and Restore Balance. Edgar is also principal of Decolonizing Wealth Project and its fund, Liberated Capital, and he's an enrolled member of the Lumbee Tribe of North Carolina, and he's been on our program a couple of times before. Welcome back, Edgar.
Thank you. Always good to be back.
So I spoke to you when your book first came out, and then you and I met last year in Atlanta at this incredible conference that Decolonizing Wealth Project put on, specifically focused on reparations. We're in an election year, and after the racial justice reckoning of 2020, President Biden was urged to take on the issue when he became president, to take on this issue of reparations at a federal level. It's just fallen out of the headlines, except for places where people are taking action, like in the state of California. Why, for you, should reparations be an election issue?
You know, I see no path forward to racial healing in this country that does not include reparations. We are seeing the wealth gap by race grow at an exponential rate. We're seeing an elimination of the middle class. We are seeing many policies and come forth, and also remnants of old policies and systems that continue to create issues of poverty and challenges in the Black community in terms of access to healthcare services, education, so forth and so on. And so when we think about every issue impacting this community, it all comes down to money and the lack of access to wealth and resources. And so for me, reparations is not only a way to address a multitude of issues impacting the Black community, it is the way that can help reunite this country that has been so divided over the last couple of years, bringing Black people, other people of color, and white people together around a common goal of collective healing.
Now, when we think about how reparations can actually become reality, we hear so many reasons why it's simply not practical. But as I mentioned, California is paving the way. There was a major reparations task force at the state level, and there's been legislation introduced. But in the end, there are still questions about whether it can get implemented. And a lot of people remain skeptical, especially Black folks who understandably get that this country has always been reluctant to issue cash compensation to Black Americans because just, you know, white supremacy deeply embedded in the fabric of the nation. Couldn't this issue be a winning election issue for Biden if he were to embrace it and really distinguish himself from the person who's the likely Republican nominee?
I think so. I think that for many Black people in this country, they have felt that the Democratic Party shows up for them in the beginning but does not follow through on its promises. Biden actually said in the 2020 election that he supported a commission to study reparations and has fallen through on that commitment and promise. In fact, he has not even taken a meeting with reparation advocates to have a discussion. So I think what we see is kind of what we see time and time again is sort of this fatigue with the Democratic Party because of its failure to follow through on its promises to Black people. I have seen and heard that some Black folks are beginning to lose hope. We know that according to studies that 75% of Black Americans support reparations, but only 14% believe that it's actually possible that they would see reparations happen in their lifetimes. And so this hope gap comes about because of the lack of political will for politicians to support this issue, but also to what you said, This has been sort of an academic debate or an academic issue and debate, but it has not yet become a political issue. And so without that political will and push behind it from the leadership of this country, it feels like reparations is the thing that could be out of reach for a lot of people.
Given the right, the right-wing vicious attacks on critical race theory and education, on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, there is this fear, I think, that reparations would just be too radical. But then that fear just appeases the right. What do you think?
You know, I think that what we're witnessing in terms of the backlash on truth and history in this country, from the banning of books to other types of campaigns, for me is an indicator that we're right on track with our desire to see reparations come about. Reparations is not just a fiscal transaction that is moving money to Black folks. It's actually a validation of this country's history. It's an opportunity for this country to apologize for genocide and for the hundreds of years of slavery and all of the oppressive policies from Jim Crow that continue through this day. And so it is not just about money. It is so much deeper. It is about standing in our truth and facing the truth so that we can actually move forward and heal. And so I actually believe that the backlash that is coming about in terms of attacks on history is a result of our demands for reparations. And so I think we're doing something right, and we're on to something here that is really powerful that can move our country forward. And those who do not want that and oppose that see the attack on history as a direct hit towards our progress around repair.
And then backing away from the fight is exactly the wrong thing to do, right?
Absolutely. We are seeing fear tactics be implemented, from voter suppression to Supreme Court cases around affirmative action. Right now, litigation is a key strategy of the right to try to cause us to be afraid. We're seeing corporations back down on DEI. We're seeing DEI programs defunded. And even within philanthropy, the sector where I work, foundations are regressing on their commitments to racial justice out of fear of litigation. And so what we really need to do in this time is be brave and stand in our convictions and actually double down on our investment, on our commitments, on our teaching, and holding space around issues of equity more than ever before.
When Donald Trump became president in 2016, we saw this resurgence of white supremacy. And there's, of course, this fear that all of that will come back this year. And, you know, I can't even sort of bring myself to talk about who could win the 2024 election. But this particular issue cuts to the heart of the white supremacist origins of this nation, right? If Donald Trump is the white supremacist nominee or candidate for president, the way to beat him is to precisely oppose that. Reparations is one very specific way to do that. There's lots of other folks, people talk about abolition, folks talking, as you said, about DEI and about education on critical race theory. What will it take to make Biden embrace this issue from your perspective?
I think for Biden, but also for the community at large, what it's really going to take is an understanding that, our country is broken. It has been for a long, long time. We have a history and legacy of white supremacy that is not just in the past, as you were saying. It is ever so present. And the only way to begin for me, the only path forward that I see is education and understanding of how we got here and what is broken, and a true belief that this is not just about giving money to Black people. It is not about trying to, beg for resources to funnel those into communities that have been underserved. That's really, really important. But what we're actually asking for here is, we're actually extending a lifeline into the very soul of this country to save this country, because reparations is about healing. It's about repairing. And when we understand as non-Black people, I'm Indigenous, as white people, as other folks who are not a part of this community, that reparations is just as much as about our own healing and the healing of this country. Because, you know, when we think about we're in Black History Month, Black History Month is not just about the history of Black people, it is American history. And so this history and legacy of harm and oppression and slavery and all the things that have happened to Black people is also our history, and we have to take ownership of it. And so we don't have reparations today or support for reparations in the way that we should, because people don't see that it benefits themselves, when in fact, it actually is about the healing and benefit of all of us by focusing on a place where the pain has been so deep because of our history.
Right. Compensation for generational theft. You know, there's so many ways to put it. And I'm sort of also thinking about how there was a time when Democrats shied away from, say, reproductive justice issues and abortion. They supported it when asked, but they didn't make it front and center till Republicans successfully attacked it, till we lost on the federal level the right to an abortion. And we started seeing Democrats then winning elections on, you know, the defense of abortion. Now it's an issue that Biden is embracing front and center almost too late. And I'm wanting, you know, there's lessons in that, right? Like moving away from the things that you fear are stigmatized, but are actually popular, doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I think there's a lot of lessons that we as progressives can learn about how the right has mobilized. They are very coordinated. They have very crisp messaging that they are all bought into. They are unified and coordinated. And I think there's a lesson learned for us. We need to get ahead of that. We need to invest in the leadership of people of color. We need to move away from being so divided around our multitude of issues and understand the intersectionality of our issues and come together as a unified front to push back on what's happening. So we've said this in my field of philanthropy for a long time, because progressive philanthropy tends to be very short-term, very issue-based, very much about organizational building. Whereas on the right, they are investing for the long-term. They have a long-term vision for what they want this country to be, and they are executing a plan against that. And so I hope that we can move out of this defensive posture, which, you know, feels really hard in the moment, to get to a place where we are thinking long term and investing in the right leaders and community to lead us to where we need to be. And that is in women, people of color, queer folks, and otherwise, who are deeply impacted by the issues, and I believe truly have the right set of solutions to guide us to where we need to go.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Edgar, for joining us. We're very excited at Yes Magazine to unveil a series of articles funded by Decolonizing Wealth Project starting next week. And I'll be interviewing all of the authors who have written about reparations in these deeply reported stories that we'll be publishing. So the next 2 weeks of Rising Up with Sonali will cover reparations start to finish. Edgar, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
My guest has been Edgar Villanueva, best-selling author of the book Decolonizing Wealth, Indigenous Wisdom to Heal Divides and Restore Balance. He's also principal of Decolonizing Wealth Project and its fund Liberated Capital, and an enrolled member of the Lumbee Tribe of North Carolina. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast can be found at iTunes and Spotify.